The Everything Apartments podcast is provided with support from the Apartment Association of Greater Los Angeles, better known as AGLA, serving residential landlords throughout Southern California through education and advocacy. Visit aagla.org. Welcome to the Everything Apartments podcast. I'm your host, Eric Christopher. And on this podcast, we cover all topics of multifamily investments, from buying and financing properties, day-to-day operations and management, and also reinvestment strategies. Today, we're going to talk about what's your title. And when I say what's your title, I mean title insurance. Title insurance is something we all experience when we move through a purchase or a refinance. But unlike insurance we buy for our cars or fire insurance for our properties, we probably don't really think of title insurance after the transaction's complete. Title insurance is obviously there to protect the buyer and also the mortgage lender. Luckily, the exposure to a claim is mostly remote compared to a car insurance or maybe a home insurance policy. But today we'll dig a little bit into the topic. How does it work? And more importantly, what can you do to make sure there isn't a snag with the title aspect when you say want to sell your property? And I've actually seen a few of those issues pop up over the years. We have a great guest to help us understand title insurance a little better. But first, I'll tell you about our firm, WSC Realty Advisors and WSC Property Management. WSC has been helping buyers and sellers and managing properties in Long Beach for over 16 years. Let's say you're tired of managing your units and want to travel more, or you're just not getting the reporting or response level you want from your current manager. We could help. WSC never wants to be the biggest firm in Long Beach. Instead, we stay smaller and more agile to bring the quality you want. We can also help you if you're looking to acquire more units here or maybe an out-of-state exchange scenario. That's going on a lot these days. Visit wsc-pm.com. Call, text, or email us. All that information's in the show notes. If you're watching on YouTube, it's obviously right over my shoulder. Mention the Everything Apartments podcast and get your first 2 months of management absolutely free. Whatever your challenge with your property is, WSC has a solution. Today, we have Doug Thompson with us. Doug is a vice president of sales at WFG National Title, which happens to be the sixth largest underwriter in the country. Doug's been in the real estate industry for 36 years. He started as a residential realtor, then moved into the escrow closing sector with Burrow Escrow, and I use them. They're a really well-performing company that I've had a great experience with. And also along that was a 1031 exchange. They do both of those. And I believe they're in Orange County, right, Doug?
Yeah, they were an Orange County-based company for sure.
Okay, so Doug was named Affiliate of the Year by the West Orange County Association of Realtors. Then in 1993, Doug transitioned to the title industry at the grassroots level, including the searching, which we'll talk about, all the way up to the closing process. And then Doug created a product out of his own ingenuity, a pre-sale preliminary title and summary grading report, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Doug is also consistently ranked in the top five nationally in all sales within the title industry. Doug, it's great to have you with us today.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. We really want to see what we can do to help out the people that are interested in title insurance information.
You know, obviously, along title and escrow, it probably ranks down a little bit of, let's say, the sexiness, because you've got this contract complete that you might have spent some time to negotiate with the buy side and that whole hurdle. And right. Then everybody that's the, you know, principal side, they, in their mind, they think, oh, the transaction's done. Well, as brokers and service providers, we know there's nothing further from the truth. Right. Certainly, as I mentioned in the intro, you know, most people have a general idea of what title insurance is supposed to do. Let's get a little better understanding around it. We as owners encounter title insurance at the sale transaction and also refinancing. But in a sale transaction, like I just said, the contract gets finished, escrow opens, and title gets open. What happens then on the title side?
Well, what's going to happen once, like you said, you've got your contracts together, all the parties have agreed, you've got that over to escrow. Escrow then is going to call a title company that's in the contract and say, we'd like to open a title report so we can find the condition of the property. So as we're working through the transaction, we're able to go through whatever might be a hurdle on that prelim to close on time. And then what we'll do, it'll take a few days to get a prelim out, and it'll get sent to all the parties, escrow, It'll get sent to the lender. It'll get sent to the realtors as well. And then at that point, that's when you as a realtor to consult with your seller or buyers, what's in there and do they approve what's on the preliminary title report.
And along with that, in most sale contracts, there'll be a title contingency that gets removed usually right. along the same timeline as a lot of the other contingency inspection periods.
Right. That's what I was referring to, whether they are okay with what's on the report or not.
I'm assuming, and this is just my frame of reference, I could be totally wrong. In my career, you know, 16 years, and I think I sold about 120 properties or so, I haven't seen a whole lot of snags. Most of them seem to have what you call typical exceptions. You're going to see what property taxes,
right?
Easements from utility, things like this. Those are pretty common on every report, aren't they?
Right, right. The only time we don't see easements is when it might run along the other property next door or something like that. But yeah, those are pretty normal. Property taxes are going to be on there as well as that. And then usually if there's a loan, the loans will show that are on the property as well too.
Okay, so those are the, let's say the higher percentage have just the normal, no real red flag issues. But right. there's a reason we do this, and that is right. there are red flags that pop up. I'll give you a quick example of one that I learned a lot about. And this property had been owned by an estate, you know, basically the parents who had passed, and then the two brothers were getting on in their years too, but there hadn't been a loan on this property in 35 years. And
right.
lo and behold, we pulled the prelim and there was a contractor lien on the prelim from 1984.
Right.
So there are things that maybe the owner doesn't even know about. Is that right?
That's right. Now, was that a loan that they had previously or?
It was some work that was performed on the property back when and
right.
ended up being, I'll get more of the story in a minute, but it ended up being kind of a nuisance more than anything else. Right. But the point being is, from time to time, there may be things that have occurred on that title report that either the owner has forgot about, maybe never even knew about. So those kind of create a little bit of static in an escrow. Now, tell me about what you've seen most commonly, things that need to be fixed.
I think a lot of times what we're seeing is when, especially in apartment buildings, you'll see, or investment properties, you'll see more seller carrybacks than you will see like in residential properties, right? Single family homes and condos. So when a buyer buys a property, sometimes a seller does a little carryback. That seller gets paid off. They don't really know how to do a loan reconveyance, so they don't do it. So a lot of times those show up. It's been paid off. Everything's fine. It's a matter of processing. Can we find those people? Can we get them to do a reconveyance? Do we have proof of payment? And we kind of work with you on that. The other one is just when they pay off a loan. So they might buy the property. And then as a lot of homeowners, a lot of your customers may have done, is refinance recently. Well, a lot of times the bank does not do the reconveyance. So they think they've paid off their loan. They've gone through escrow. It's all done. But then when we pull the preliminary title report, we still show that old loan on there. And a lot of times they will say, well, you know, I paid this off. So at that point, we work with you to make solutions to clear that, or we work with the lender. But some of the other ones you'll see is like maybe a previous owner had a loan, right? Previous owner had a loan. Your guy purchased the property, got a title policy that said there was no loan on them from previous owner. But then when we pull the title report from another title company, you find out there's that old loan from 45 years ago. Why is it still there? You know, a lot of times the title company at the time that closed the transaction may have received information through the previous seller or the transaction that made them comfortable with insuring that particular property without a reconveyance, which can happen, right? And so that's when a lot of times I know that we were talking earlier about what happens when it's okay with one title company, but not with another. Then that's when sometimes we would say, hey, we recommend maybe you go back to such and such at whatever company and say, look, are you willing to insure this with this loan in place, right? And so that's kind of what happens. Other things that happen, like you said, mechanics liens, people get work done. There's a mechanics lien, they pay the person, they think everything's okay, but that contractor never goes back and clears it, right? Other ones we see are bail bonds. Sometimes there's a family member that goes to jail, there's a bail bond, it's all clear, there's no problems. Those bail bond companies never clear their bonds. So those are some of the things that we see regularly.
So a lot of loose ends, which what do? They just extend the period of the escrow kind of unnecessarily. So maybe that's something to think about and to review. Let's say you're going to sell your property in the next, year or so.
Right.
What's to stop you from grabbing a prelim and just making sure there's a clean bill of health on there and anything that you need to work on those loose ends or bigger issues, work on them now so that once you get up to the starting line on your escrow, you're not hamstrung for an extra 30 days. Everybody gets nervous. Everybody's got a timeline and right. Time kills deals. So, and what I learned with that other example I gave you was when I spoke to the title officer, he explained to me, he says, look, this property hadn't had a loan on it in, 30 plus years. He says, we have a much easier time with something that's had a refinance or maybe, a sale occurred 5 or 7 years ago and now the owner wants to sell it. Or if it's been refinanced 2 or 3 times, kind of gives us a basis to underwrite the window that we're going to underwrite versus opening ourselves up to like 30 years worth.
Right, right. Well, usually what you can do for a lot of your clients that are listening here is if you're talking to someone out selling their property, you would just send over that address to us and we could do a little bit of that research for you up front. But a lot of times it's not that it's a problem insuring older properties. It's just that the information is not readily accessible on the computer. So like if there's a refi 2 years ago or a sale 5 years ago, we can go on the computer, pull it up. We have everything we need to do to search. When it's 30, 40 years old, that could be a backplant search. We're just hiring a service that's going to pull that data for us, but it could be on microfiche where they have to pull it, print it, send it to us. There's not a problem with it. It's just the search takes longer. So when someone like you is going to list a property, we recommend you at the time of listing, you order the prelim, right? Before you've gotten into escrow. That usually gives us a couple weeks to start looking at everything, working on it, to try to find out if there's anything on that's going to be an issue. That also gives you time that if it's hasn't been searched for a long time, gives us those extra couple days to finish that search for you.
Makes sense. Certainly there's activity that occurred and nothing since the old microfiche days, and a lot of younger listeners won't even know what that is.
That's right.
Like looking up a book at the library using the little file cards, which I've used.
Yeah, that's funny. My son bought a record player the other day. He's 21. And then my wife had some 45s in the attic and they're playing them and they're like, what is this? So now, yeah, microfiche would be prior to computers.
So seller typically purchases the owner policy in favor of the buyer. That makes sense. And then secondarily, now we're going to go do a refinance. I, as the borrower, pay for a policy in favor of the lender. What are the differences there? We were talking about coverage amounts and what picks up. I had a misconception about the refinance one. So tell me a little bit about the difference between purchase and refi.
Okay, we'll start with the purchase. When you do a purchase, there's two policies involved. There's an owner's policy, which is going to cover the owner. That's going to be the buyer. The buyer is going to be the new owner. And the seller typically pays for that policy. The buyer's given the seller money for the property. The seller's given the buyer a title policy. And it's an owner's policy that's paid for by the seller. And that price is set by the sales price of the property because the new owner, the buyer, is going to want an insurance policy covering up to the value that he purchased the property at. Now, at the same time, that buyer might be getting a loan. Maybe they're getting a loan from a bank for a percentage of the purchase price. That lender then wants a policy in their name in case they maybe need to foreclose in the future, that they've got a policy protecting their loan position in the property. Now, that policy price will be based on their loan amount. So that way the lender's covered for the amount of money they've lent on the property.
No, so the way I understood it the other day, because I never really thought about this, is at the time of purchase, the policy that's being created in favor of the buyer runs in perpetuity to that ownership.
Right. So that owner's policy, when that buyer purchased the policy, like we just talked about, the buyer purchased the property, the seller pays for a owner's policy. That buyer now has an owner's policy in their name covering them. That stays in effect as an owner's policy. If that homeowner, that buyer of that property decides, I'm going to get a new loan, I'm going to refinance my property, there's going to be a new bank. So it's going to be just like the other loan where they're giving it's going to be a loan for the lender that covers the lender and the lender's position in the property. And that policy will, price will be based on the new loan amount that they're getting. And that policy just covers the new lender. The owner's policy they got when they purchased the property is the one that's going to protect them and their ownership.
Great clarity on that. Now, as far as policy limits go, I thought about this morning. Let's say 20 years ago, I bought a property and it was $1 million. And now it's worth, say, $2.5 million. I've got the title insurance covered on $1 million. What happens, and I don't know if this is super remote, that 20 years later, somebody would come out of the woodwork and challenge that title or anything else having to do with the title.
Right.
What do you tell people that go, well, you know, it's sort of like building insurance based on an appraised value that just sort of runs with the, I'm talking about fire insurance.
Right.
And I was clued into this by our insurance vendor. He said, look, you need to reassess what the value is, let's say every 2 to 4, maybe 5 years. So right. You're purchasing the right amount of coverage.
Right.
How does that apply in the title space?
Well, in title space, it doesn't, you know, I've not seen one like that where the value, the lien was so much more than the value like that to answer directly on that question. But what happens in the process if somebody shows up like it's an heir, right? An heir shows up and says, wait a minute, this one's supposed to be sold. I'm owed so much money. The property's now worth this much and I want this amount of money. So what that's doing is that's creating a ownership use problem for the property. Now the seller has a property he can't sell and now he's in a lawsuit. So that's when the title company, that's when the owner would put a claim into the title company. They'd say, look, I've got a letter from an attorney. This person's saying they own a certain amount of money. Here's the claim. They would turn that claim in then to the title insurance company. And at that point, a lot of times what happens, it's just like any kind of a claim, where, you know, like a lawsuit where people start to get involved and they start to work through it and they negotiate and they come to a resolution prior to a court case. That's usually what happens, and that's how they usually get resolved. And usually the title company is going to be on the hook for if they've missed something in the past. That's why it's different than like homeowner's insurance or car insurance, because that's insuring against something that might happen in the future. We're insuring from the day you become an owner into the past. Anything that's happened previous to you becoming the owner, that's what we're insuring against, a loss for or loss of use of the property or, you know, a monetary loss due to a claim.
That's different. And I think if I remember my dad's old insurance terminology, that's tail coverage.
Correct.
Something that's occurred in the past that no one really knew about sitting here today. Right. Completely opposite than when you ding your fender up or have a flood in your house.
Correct.
I've read, but I need a refresher on if Alta versus C-Alta is a relevant difference. I mean, tell me the two different forms and why maybe an apartment owner or maybe he or she wouldn't care to like spend more to get, I guess, more features and benefits of those two. What's the difference there?
Right. On most apartment buildings that we see, what we're mostly issuing is the CLTA policy. I know on my apartment buildings, that's what I have. Some of the coverage there was what we just talked about. Someone else says they own part of the property. There's a document, not properly signed or acknowledged, your title is affected by forgery or a fraud or an incapacity at the time of a sale, restrictions and covenants to the property that you weren't told about, like a deed restriction, lien on title, these type of things, mortgages, your title becomes unmarketable. Those are the things that are covered by a CLTA. And a CLTA coverage policy covers everything that's non-residential. So it would be over 4 units, 5 and plus units, land, and all commercial properties. That's what we're issuing on a regular basis. Usually when we get into bigger properties, large properties, sometimes they might want an ALTA coverage as well too. Sometimes to do an ALTA coverage, we would need an ALTA survey. Those ALTA surveys are usually paid for by the buyer, but some of the coverage that would be added to that would be other types of mechanics liens, material furnished before the policy date. Someone has rights affecting your title arising out of leases, contracts, options. I know sometimes with apartments, you have those leases for the laundry equipment, right? So there's those things that show up like that. Cannot use the property as the units that you purchased it for. Forced removal of existing structures, forced removal of existing boundary walls, et cetera, like that. Like if the neighbor came over and said, hey, we're trying to remodel our house and now you have to move the wall, you have to move a structure, a parking structure, something like that. So there's a little bit extra coverages with those things like that, that would be involved. And now the policy limits and the policy deductibles are set by the title company and they're embedded into those policies. So they're not really negotiable at that time because those are preset forms with CLTA, California Land Title Association, and then ALTA, American Land Title, so their title association. So those are preset forms. And then we, each title company will then set their limits within those.
So it's standardization across those two classifications, similar to if you buy the same coverage limits from, you know, auto insurance company A to B, the forms are typically identical based on state guidelines and whatnot.
And that's important because that gives, you know, continuity to what's happening. Everybody knows what's being insured, because one of the things people don't understand about title insurance is all these loans that are taking place of purchasing property. Title insurance is a big part of that money getting back into bonds and becoming part of the secondary market. So there's a lot of money available for us to for people to get loans and purchase properties. So that's why it's important to have those preset like that.
So it sounds like the limitations or features and benefits would be very similar. We'll get back to that in a second. Tell me about premiums on a escrow basis, and I believe it's on the title as well. Is it a factor per thousand? Just generally, kind of what's the formula around that?
There isn't actually a specific formula. I've tried to figure that out for years. It's just the rates that the different title companies want to charge. And what we do is, the title company, the rates by a title company charges are set by the company. So we will set our rates, but then we have to get them approved by the state. Once the state approves those rates, then we have to stay on those rates, because then those are state approved rates, even though the different title companies can set their own rates. Sometimes they get approved, sometimes they don't. And then you'll notice that when you get to high liability properties, over 5 million, over 10 million, you will see that sometimes the title companies will negotiate the sales price on those things. Although last time we went in for title insurance rates, we put in our book that we wanted to, you know, leave that up to negotiating. And they basically said, we don't want you to do that anymore. We want it all in the rate book. So that might go away. But as of right now, I believe that when you're over 5 million, there is flexibility for the negotiating the title insurance fees.
So on the premiums being state regulated,
right,
or state approved, I should say, is there a reason to shop for title insurance, or are they mostly pretty similar in their rate structures?
I think that they're pretty close, within 10 or 15%. I think maybe 20 the max. But, you know, if a policy is $3,000, it's $300 is 10% or 15%. So if they're pretty close, I think the most important thing that, like we talked about in the beginning, was that the person you're using and the title, we're the sixth largest underwriter. A large company is good to have versus a small company that doesn't underwrite themselves. And then also someone's going to help you through this process and work through these issues with you so that you can close your transaction.
And you're kind of segueing into my next topic, and I do agree with you. If it's a $3,000 policy plus or minus 10%, I don't think a lot of people are going to spend much time thinking about that. I do know, like, the highly active investors and developers, they have a relationship with X, Y, or Z. That's a little different. But
right,
the rest of us are doing one transaction a year or every other year. It sounds like you're probably going to get a similar price point from the different ones. Which I said you segued. What I like to ask people in competitive industries like that, where the prices are very narrow in differences, how does a company like yours differentiate itself from the others? I mean, are there features and benefits that maybe the other guys don't add that you do outside of what you just told me?
Right, right. Well, a lot of things that I do as a title insurance representative is when I'm working with you and working with one of your customers, and you've got a policy, a prelim that comes out, and there's an issue with it. I think just going the extra mile and really understanding the industry, from being a realtor, from being an escrow, from being an investor myself, from being in title for 30 years, knowing how to talk to attorneys, being willing to talk to homeowners. I got a transaction put that together yesterday for a customer because they didn't understand the CC&R. So being able to explain the CC&Rs, we're willing to talk with the customers, the sellers, the buyers, and do what it takes to help you close the transaction or make people comfortable understand the information that they have. The other thing too is the flexibility in underwriting. We are one of the largest companies, but we still have the ability to be flexible. When you get to a super large company, the biggest companies out there, sometimes they'll have preset things they just will or will not do, where those do make sense. We do have some of the similar type of rules, but we'll go the next step. Let's call the attorney. Let's find out, can we get an attorney's opinion letter from this? You know, is there a person that we can find through doing a people search to find out, get some more information to help you close a file? So that's the extra. That's why our clients use us on a regular basis, because they know when they get that report, if they need help, they're going to get the information they need quickly to help the sellers, buyers, and real estate agents make a good decision on the property.
What came to mind when you're talking about features and benefits, and yours is like mine, highly competitive. There's competitors right. available up and down the street, just like myself, for management and brokerage. I read an interesting book by Richard Branson, Virgin guy. Everybody knows who he is. And he said something in one of his books that I've always kept in my mind is, if you're in a highly competitive industry, and obviously in a highly competitive industry, the margins get slimmed out and you know, sounds like what we're talking about here. It's all service. You better out-service the crap out of your competitors, and that's the only way to survive. And it's always stuck with me, and I think that applies here.
Right. Here's one of the other things too. We came out with a product, Inman News rated it number 2 when it came out a couple of years ago. It's called My Home. And My Home is a customer portal. So you would use that with you and your clients if they want to be that active. But our ratings on that, we're getting super high ratings and reviews on that, because the customer, the buyer and seller, can log into the portal that they're going to get when they open the transaction. They can securely upload documents there versus maybe having some unsecure of their information going out. They can see what's happening in the transaction. There's a timeline in the transaction. And the transparency of the customer has really helped with the reviews, not just for our company, but also for the broker, in terms of that customer really wants a lot of communication and know what's going on in the transaction.
I used something like that a couple of years ago on a transaction that, you know, it might have been branded by the escrow and powered right. by the title. I don't really remember, but it was very efficient. And I think obviously that's the way the world's going, is
right.
have real-time information. That nothing is worse in the world in real estate transaction or anything else, is just like not knowing what's going on. Are we waiting on this from the other side? So that sounds very efficient, something that a lot of people, as we go along, will enjoy more.
Yeah. One of the other things, that we're a pretty high tech company. We came out with it 2 years ago. You'll see the large firms coming out with it probably by the end of the year. They're all going to start pushing it as well, too. One of the other things that makes us really good for what we do is our level of security. We have the highest level of security in terms of our customers, their information. We have a lot of information on customers, buyers, sellers, and that information has to be kept secure. So the level of security, I know it's sometimes it's hard for me to work, because the level of security with my email system, with my phone, I can't just be sharing information, you know, with my phone. It's locked up. So that is another key benefit to what we provide our clients.
In this day and age, you got to have it. So in your intro I did on you, I want to learn more about this, because it sounded like you developed it back in time. You developed something different. So tell me about what this pre-sale preliminary title and summary grading report is you came up with.
Well, what happened was, in the early 90s, we had a little downturn in the market. I had a Korean customer, and she did a lot of small apartments, like 2 to 4 units. She did a lot of those, and she owned a lot of those. And they were having a lot of short sales on them. And so Fannie Mae contacted her to speak Korean to them, to see if they could do if they were going to do a foreclosure, or if they were going to do a short sale. And so what I said was, hey, when they give you the property, instead of giving them a property profile, let's give them a prelim. I'll read that prelim. We'll create a grading report, whether it's an A, B, or C. A meaning it's clean, B meaning there's some things to clean up, C meaning we got some problems, we might not be able to close. What's great now is our company has an automatic report that comes out to you that does it automatically, right? So digital now, that the system, then there's codes within the computer for certain types of liens and transit and things that would show on the prelim, picks those up and gives you a colored code. So it's going to be red, yellow, or green. And those are given to the customer and you along with the prelim. So it's an automatic service provided to you and your customers right now. But I created it then because I knew that when it was going to Fannie Mae, they're looking at a lot of information. And I figured if they could get to what they wanted to really quick, it would help my customer be able to close those transactions faster.
Keep an executive summary in front of them and keep the ball rolling.
Just wanted to make sure you guys all understood about investors that might be selling properties and not holding them. So if you're going to be selling them within a couple of years, you can purchase what's called a binder. It's a low cost, couple hundred dollars for that. When you go to resell your property, it'll save you thousands of dollars in title insurance fees. So it's a good idea to ask to Eric to make sure that you're getting the binder policy if you think you're going to sell that property within a couple of years.
So sounds like something that fix and flip kind of people, or what you're saying, buy a unit, value added in under a 24-month period, save a bunch of money on the title side of it. We'll leave it there. But on that topic or any other that we've talked about today, all of Doug's information is going to be in the show notes, either on the podcast platform you're listening to or on the YouTube that you're watching it on. And if you have any questions about the title space, anything going on that you're curious about, I'm pretty sure Doug would love to help you. Talk to him about that. He's been around, obviously, a very long time. Doug, we really appreciate having you with us today.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
This is Eric Christopher. I'm the host of Everything Apartments Podcast. We'll have another episode coming soon.